Are we good?
Yep.
All right. I'd like to call this committee meeting to order. Senator Dembrough, thank you. I know you came straight from another committee, so thank you for hustling up here. You've had a very busy morning. I think what we'd like to do to start off this meeting is thank you all for your participation in this task force. This has gone on now for, I believe, 7 months. Approximately, I really...
It's been longer than that.
8 months?
We had our first meeting last September.
Okay. I came on late,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, that's what it was. Yes.
All right. I was an interloper. But thank you all for your desire and willingness to participate, first of all. I know this has been a lot of labor for a lot of people. There are a lot of ideas and opinions that have come forward. We greatly appreciate the work of the people who have come to testify before this committee during all of this time and gave us their valuable time to help educate us on issues that are of concern and things that we can begin to work on, maybe continue to work on as we move forward. I think I'd like to start this meeting with asking Patrick, who put together the report that is before you, to just take some time and go through this report so we all clearly understand what's here, and then we'll move forward with some conversation about recommendations, potential recommendations, and what next steps are in moving us forward. So I'll turn this over to Patrick.
Just for brevity's sake, I will not read verbatim what the report is. I'll just kind of summarize what each particular section is under the heading. The first page is essentially just a summary in narrative form of what the Bill 782 directed the task force to do. The first paragraph is whereas clauses. The second paragraph is what its charges were for what we were supposed to look at. And then at the end of there, it says that we're supposed to issue a report, and that's what this is. Then on the top of page two, just a summary of the seven meetings, this being the seventh that we've had, where we met, who we talked to. And then from there, that last sentence says that this last meeting is December 2014, that's right now. So then from there, I wrote a narrative version of a document that we had at a previous meeting, two meetings ago, which was the, maybe it was the last meeting, the five approaches document. Just wrote that out in narrative form. So it's kind of a summary of the current Oregon apprentice system, the ODOT system, which I actually received an edit this morning, just about a half an hour ago from ODOT for clarification in that the ODOT section on the fourth line where it says paying up to 15% of total hours worked by apprentices, that actually is apparently supposed to be 150% of total hours worked by apprentices. So I made that correction at ODOT's request. Otherwise, it's as written. And then the top page three, the State of Washington program, we had them present that program at our November meeting of last year. And then the approach within Senate Bill 782A, that was one that we had in the five approaches document. And it was the bill as passed by the Senate last session. And then the fifth one was the responsible bidder proposal, which we first heard when we were in 10. It was presented by NECA. From there, I tried to try to gather kind of the major themes, that additional issues for consideration, the major themes that had come up during the discussions in the various meetings. And so that's probably the area where if there's anybody who thinks that any of the issues that we talked about were missed or I didn't capture the gist of what those issues were, the economy and the effect that that's had on the apprenticeship program and contracting in general, the diversity within the apprenticeship and within the contracting, the trades. Geographic balance, that was an issue that came up several times, including quite a bit at the last meeting that we had. Administrative issues, which came up pretty early in the process, those were mostly related to how new programs are approved and how adjustments are made. Flexibility, that's kind of self-explanatory and catches a couple different things. Compliance, which is we only touched on a little bit. Capacity, which relates to the ability, if we were to try and ramp up apprenticeship training, how that system would need to be expanded for capacity. And then apprentice preparedness. That was mostly based on just some comments made by witnesses at some of the meetings about, you know, when we were in tangent, we heard a lot from some folks about, you know, there's some, to be a high-level apprentice candidate, there's, you know, in some of the trades, math skills are involved. We heard from some folks when we went to Chemeketa that there are a lot of people come into the program with less tool using experience, maybe, shall we say, than was the case in the past. And so that's what that was attempting to capture. And then from there, there's a blank heading under recommendations, and that was a placeholder in the event that this group generates any recommendations for what the legislature could or should do. So I guess if everybody's had a chance to look at this, if anybody has any suggestions for changes that they'd like to see, now would be the time to bring those up, or additions or subtractions.
More comments.
Has everybody had a chance to take a good look at this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my apologies. This was supposed to go out Friday. I thought I had sent it out Friday. I checked it off my list on Friday, and instead it went out yesterday morning, so that was not very much time to give you all to look at it. So that was an error on my part, so I apologize.
I think it's worth noting that at our last meeting, there was also some commentary about the continuation of the task force to pursue options.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which wasn't noted.
And I was assuming that that might fall under the issue of recommendations.
Okay.
So, yeah, because that definitely has come up more than once. Yeah, it's possible.
And I think it's come up in the light of some things that we've identified now that you know, there may be some conversation that would be helpful in tweaking a few things to address some issues that we have uncovered. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Good. Like it's a good document or somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick.
That's a good summary.
Good summary,
Patrick, for doing that.
So, procedurally, then I think the next thing that the group would want to do is discuss whether there should be anything in the way of recommendations made by the task force, and then a discussion about that. And if there are, then any recommendation would come forward. We need a vote. We need an affirmative vote of 8 of the members who are sitting here or more.
And do we also need a vote of 8 to
yes, and then
codify the report?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So I would assume that codifying the report or approving the report overall would come at the end after there's any discussion of whether to insert recommendations, and then if so, then you would do that and then adopt the report.
Okay. Sounds good. Senator?
So, do we want to adopt the report as is, or have our conversation around recommendations and then include those in the what it is that we're adopting?
Yeah, I would recommend number 2 on that, the second option.
So if there are recommendations, this would be the time to bring them forward and let the group discuss, and then we would add them to the report and then move the report forward with the recommendations. Okay. Yes.
I'd like to, excuse me, maybe expound or discuss more on the continuation of this task force. I think that should be thrown out on the table and the reasons why. I think this is a lifetime opportunity for us to really have an impact. And I think that we've come up with a lot of the problems. I think we've looked at how other entities deal with apprenticeship, but I don't know, as a group, we've actually sat down and continued on with what are the solutions and what can we possibly do in our own package that would be good for, you know, the entire state. I know that public contracting, of course, has some buying power with its money, but I could really see if they took some of their money and followed up with some of the career for children in high schools, and we could actually do something that would build a pool that would be successful for everyone in the industry, that would be something that this task force could actually work on and go forward with. And I think that would be really positive. I think to just close it off based on some of this information that we've got to date really isn't what this task force was created to do.
And Sandy, I totally agree. I think from talking to not only a lot of you, but many others in the building and in industry, the issue of career tech ed is very high on the radar and I think will be in this session, and I think the senator would agree. and a number of other people in the room would agree that Career Tech Ed is creating that seamless transition from the high school programs that we want to fund at a higher level. Coming up in the next session, we have a great start in the last two sessions of not only piloting the CTE revitalization program, but in the last session we increased the amount. We need to go a step farther, or two or three steps farther. And I think this committee's conversation in supporting that is really important, that we get behind that. I'm not sure this is the venue for Career Tech Ed to be the main topic of conversation. And I'll look to my higher ed expert to my right, who understands this a little bit better than I do at this point. But I think we all agree it's really important. And I think we may be able to codify that in this recommendation, that support for Career Tech Ed at a higher level is something that we all want to really get behind for the next session. So I'll let the senator comment.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative. Yeah, I think, so let me say a couple of things. First of all, I think we definitely do have more work to be done on CTE and the relationship between CTE and apprenticeship. And I think that the brains around this table could be very useful mm-hmm. for that if we were to continue the task force, either, you know, with everyone here or people like us, you know, here around the table. There has been a lot of work on getting the state to reinvest directly in CTE, and the revitalization grants assume a high level of partnership between industry and the school districts, and I think we are moving in that direction. But, I think, for me personally, there is still a lot more work to be done, I think, in creating pathways for young people going through CTE programs and then moving more or less seamlessly into apprenticeships, or just, you know, to make it clear to them that if they stick with it, if they persevere, if they work hard, they say in school, et cetera, that there is a next step waiting for them. And I don't know exactly what that conversation would look like, but I believe that conversation is really critical for this state. I don't know if that's the kind of thing you were thinking of.
I am, in the sense that none of these suggestions that we've had so far, or what other people are doing, actually are phasing in a slow process to educate and bring in apprentices. And so that's why I wanted to talk a little more about continuing with the task force, so we could talk about maybe something that could work in that venue, so that one hand could work with the other at the same time.
Right. So I will say, I mean, the charge of this task force is to deal with this question of an apprenticeship standard for public contracting. I think we have to keep that focus on it. But clearly, over the course of our deliberations, a number of other issues have risen to the surface that I think are worth pursuing, and this would be one of them.
And I agree, and I also just, whatever the makeup of this task force continues to be, whether it's this task force or an iteration of this that turns into something different to support something like CTE and that seamless transition, we can discuss. But I think there are a number of other things that were identified in the course of this conversation that could go on this list that we could address in the future that were very specific. But as the senator said, this task force is focused on the Senate bill, or the bill that we passed, and we may have to morph into something a little bit different if we move forward. But are there other things that should be discussed in this continuation also?
If I may, just to add, I think we have opportunities, if we continued forward, that would be parallel to career technical education. There's some things that have been developing over the summer, like SEDCOR, the strategic economic folks, that are now getting companies, supply chain people involved, and they're building workforce development programs. There's like in my trade, there are some of the tool suppliers and some of the distribution network that are working on what they're calling pre-apprenticeship programs. So the industry mm-hmm. is rising to the occasion to some degree of this issue of which we're all facing. And I think the timing is such that if we had the opportunity to, I don't know if coordinate's the right word, but try to pull some of those people that are being innovative with coming up with new ways to get education and people interested in trades, apprenticeable type occupations and more, that opportunity is now beginning to present itself. And it would be great for this to continue and get some of those other people in the mix to look at what they're doing, what they're bringing forward that would help with the development of a larger pool of apprentices and positions for them to fill.
So I'm not familiar with said course. So would this program parallel what the CTE revitalization program would be as a public and a private, two different ventures, one public, one private, in essence?
Well, I think that's the direction they're headed somewhat now. They're involved with the community colleges. They're trying to reach out to the high schools. And they came and talked to me. And one of the things that they brought forth as an example was they have a manufacturing facility that's in Marion County that is hosting welding and metalworking classes in their facility that the SEDCOR people are helping to facilitate, bring the instructors. So they've got a manufacturer and some educators, and it's associated with Chemeketa Community College, I think, to some extent. But it's not one of their programs. And we're seeing more of that to where industries are saying, okay, we have to do something about this, and it's not happening, so they're going for it. And I think it's a great opportunity to be able to coordinate those and not have them be parallel paths, so to speak, but everybody be able to put these and work together to accomplish what we're trying to do here.
So and they're reaching out to high schools also, or is it community college level?
My understanding is they're reaching out to high school age students to try to get them into these trades. And they're providing these opportunities for them to come and learn.
And so then that creates a path then into an apprenticeship program. It's like a...
Yeah, the one that I was familiar with, it was a welding program, and they weren't really talking about apprenticeship, so to speak, as much as it was, we want to teach you how to weld, and we have an employer over here who's looking to hire welders. I'm just using that as an example that those types of programs would be very important for apprenticeship programs. It's a good model to try to look at as a potential solution to learn from some of these other private outfits that are trying to get some workforce training going.
John?
Actually, Rep. Johnson had his hand up before me.
Sorry.
He's just outside your line of sight.
Go ahead.
I don't know who CEDCOR is. Yeah. Is that initials that stand for something, or is that a...
Economic Development, right?
Salem Economic Development.
So it's a local... Yeah.
That goes years back.
Consortium.
I'm assuming that's probably...
I was just looking it up here. Just make sure I had their name completely right. It's...
If I sell my welding rod, you have to get people welding.
I may be wrong.
Strategic Economic Development Corporation.
Strategic Economic
Development. Based out of where?
They are...
Thank you.
Representative?
Madam Chair, I was just going to add that, you know, if the report before us is what will be going to the presiding officers as a report of our work, of our findings, of our research, and so forth, I do think it would be helpful if there was a greater emphasis on CTE in terms directly focusing on the fact that much of the testimony that we received has, I think, pretty clearly outlined, and I think we would have a strong consensus on this, that increased state investment and emphasis in career technical education can serve as a valuable component of increasing the numbers of potential apprentices to get into the pipeline to eventually, you know, enter into career technical certificates. My committee meeting I came from this morning, we heard a report from Ben Cannon, our director of the HEC, who is, whereas we talk about 40-40-20, and that middle 40 in the 40-40-20 is both two-year associate degrees as well as career certificates. And the data that he showed us is that currently, Oregon is meeting about 40% of the need for career certificates. That's not just all apprentices, mm-hmm. but it's across the board career certificates that can get you a pathway into a career. So obviously, we're not providing the pipeline. We're not providing an adequate number now to supply what the industry needs. So I do think that having a little bit more of an emphasis, I think, as Sandy was sharing here, on CTE as we look at it as a key component of meeting the apprenticeship needs of Oregon going forward, I think would be helpful for the presiding officers to see that, but then to compile or, you know, to couple that with the other investment that the governor is proposing in his budget, as well as other conversations that will be happening throughout session as we go through the next 5 or 6 months. So again, as we look at this at the body, the evidence of what we've been doing for the past 2 years or so, I think it would be great to have it be as thorough of a replication as possible of the work we've been doing. So, good. My 2 cents.
Thank you. Nelda. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator's first.
Well, I was just going to say that I think there's a little bit of a disconnect still, just getting people from career ed into apprenticeships. I know at the last state council meeting, subcommittee meeting, John Gardner with Work Systems, Inc. said that we're not talking about young people right out of high school. Right now, the unemployed or average age 26, I think, is what he said at the meeting. And so you've got people that have missed the step coming out of high school.
Right. How do you get them back in?
To apprenticeship or to, yeah. And I think yeah. one thing I've, you know, in looking in high schools, and of course my kids own high school, there's nothing in the career education department that even talks about apprenticeship. Counselors don't know about apprenticeship. So I think there's some money right there that needs to be spent in the school system, because I don't know, I'm not trying to be mean here, but counselors go to school and then they train to go back to school to be counselors, and they're only in school, right? I mean, they don't know all the career paths out there other than go to college. And I think that's one thing that's happened in the trades, is there's nobody to talk to them on day to day, and enough information about apprenticeships out there in the high schools and junior high schools.
You have absolutely hit on a soapbox that I spent 10 years standing on.
Yeah, well, I keep
working with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and my job was to train high school staff mm-hmm. and train parent volunteers mm-hmm. on how to work with students on their post-secondary planning.
Right.
And I brought Steve Sims in early on to train me and train our... Hi, Steve here. I sing your praises all the time, every time I get on this soapbox. And with the Aspire program, which is a state-funded program, mm-hmm. we spend an inordinate amount of time making sure that those people who are working with high school students understood that it wasn't all four-year college, private or public. It wasn't all community college. It was apprenticeship. And to some degree, you know, the proprietary schools. And we just beat our heads against a wall trying to get that information out. I hear what you're saying. You're absolutely right on. But I also think there's a move in this next session. I believe there was some funding in the governor's budget to create a different type of position in a high school, which is I've forgotten the term, but they're using it as a workforce trainer. In essence, we already have an Aspire program in place mm-hmm. to do this. So, you know, I could take issue with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
we have a system. It's just not as robust as it could be to make sure that this information is there. And this is something that, you know, we as a task force could also get behind, is making sure that
I wanted to forward that as a recommendation,
well,
really.
It is, and we also need to continue
disconnect.
To work with high school counseling masters in education programs to make sure that in our masters in counseling programs that they get the training they need, not only on apprenticeships but on college access, because it's not a robust part of the curriculum when you're becoming a high school counselor. And this is something that we all need to be aware of and have an understanding of, because we don't do a very good job of putting people in those high schools who understand this stuff. And that's part of what we need. I hope we could have conversations about also.
I'd like that to be a recommendation, at least, that goes forward, that kind of beef up that part of the system and the communication around, you know, advertising or whatever about
it's critical if we're going to meet the 40-40-20.
Yes.
And it's that seamless transition through those high school programs onto the whatever it's going to be, the apprenticeship program, the community college program. That's not what we're charged with here, but I think it's something that maybe we can pick up as a mantle and make sure that there's an understanding that there's a gap.
Yeah, I just add one thing, which is I think more advancements in CTE training will increase diversity as well. You know, we continue to have families upon families and friends of families join apprenticeships because they know someone. Mm-hmm. And until we reach out to a new population, and that population would be in the CTE environment, people that haven't been exposed to it, we're going to see the same demographics continue to slowly change, but not with any amount of pace at all.
Yes. So, well, first of all, let me say, you know, it's really gratifying to hear all this interest in CTE. Sometimes I feel like, you know, this is a broken record, but broken records have value, right? Because eventually you don't want to hear it anymore and you want to do something about it. And I'm hoping that that's where we will be as a state. You know, I think that, you know, one of the things that Carl's point about SEDCOR kind of jogged for me is one of the things that the state's Workforce Investment Board is looking at is how can we take this apprenticeship model that has been so successful in the construction industry and extend it to manufacturing or healthcare or, you know, some of those other industries that, you know, are really on the rise and that we need qualified workers from Oregon to enter those. And so, you know, I think that, you know, if we do have a subsequent committee that's looking at, you know, ramping up CTE and ramping up pre-apprenticeship programs, because those pre-apprenticeship programs, as Nelda mentioned, are going to be important for those older workers, particularly, you know, who need to be retrained, who are coming back, given that we don't have the CTE system in place to provide the young workers. It really will be, I think, important for us as part of a subsequent task force maybe to expand the optic beyond construction and look at, you know, how apprenticeship could work in other industries as well. I think that would really be useful. That would require us to expand the membership of the committee, but, you know, I think that makes sense. I think it makes sense for people from manufacturing to be hearing from people from construction about what's working and you know, that the challenges that they will raise are in many cases challenges that you all have already worked your way through. So that's just something I would throw out.
Well, and I think that makes great sense. If you look at some of the CTE programs that have been devised in some of the high schools, they're not based on building trades. They're based on the healthcare industry or based on the high-tech industry. So that it follows very naturally that we take that tack also and support those endeavors and make sure that we replicate a model that, you know, has been demonstrated to work.
And it would be good for us, this group, to be able to learn what innovative new things those people are coming up with, mm-hmm. that would apply to the construction trades. We don't want to miss out on any of that new thinking.
Good. Yes.
Representative and Senator, so going back to versus sunsetting the task force and continuing with it, one of the pieces that I guess as I'm looking at here and what 782 charged us with, you know, the past number of sessions, this is me, I feel like we're just starting to get to know one another. Mm-hmm. We're just beginning to dip our foot in the water of understanding the issues that go outside our areas of expertise. And I'll tell you, my end is as a union contractor, apprenticeship's pretty doggone easy, you know. Go to Ron and I say, I need, you know, some apprentices, and they shoot them out, and I see some guys that I think would, or gals that would be good prospects, and I get them to an interview. And I mean, so from that end, I begin to hear what goes on the open shop side, and it's like, my goodness, I mean, there's, and sitting here right now, I know just a little bit of that. I don't know very much about it to be able to come to a point that I felt I could legitimately make a recommendation going forward for our industry. And I'm here on behalf of, you know, primarily the AGC you know, I won't go into our big tent routine and all, but, you know, but it's a broad industry of broad trades, open shop, union shop, and all. And so as I look at the given items that we were charged with the task force and walk through them, I don't think, I mean, I may be wrong. Does anybody here feel like we've really tagged all of those and thoroughly discussed all of those and feel like we have solid recommendations to be able to put forth addressing all of those? You know, and we all knew when we said yay to being on this task force that it's a heavy lift because this is a big, complicated system. I guess that's all just a pitch to say, and I'll reiterate what Sandy had said. I mean, I'm not sure the last time industry and all of its partners have come together to look at apprenticeship model and say, what can we do better? You know, we did this a couple years ago through the CMGC, and that was only after 10 years of CMGC being in place. You know, this is something that is once in a decade, but it's probably once in a two or three decade opportunity of all being together here. And that's why I said, yeah, to being on it, because I'm excited about something from an industry standpoint. And I'm, all that to be said, I'm concerned, maybe concerns too strong of a word. I want to make sure our opportunity and our recommendation going forth is to continue to make headway, that whatever recommendations we make is in the basis of the opportunity that stands before us. And, you know, if we have to jumpstart something, I'm going to go back to our original 382, that it is something, right? I mean, it gets the ball going. It's been vetted. It went through the Senate unanimous. You know, is it what everybody wants? No. Is it something that gets it going? Yes. And so I guess I put that forth that, you know, if we were coming out of it and there's just an itch to be scratched of getting something on the table with, you know, I'm obviously, again, because we had sponsored it 782, but also with not sunsetting this task force, but to continue it, to continue to dig into all these varying things with all the brain trust at the table here. Because, you know, you blow up and you bring in new people and you pull out old people, there's a process of learning one another and what their issues and what their hot buttons and being able to talk offline and different sorts of things of vetting these things out. So, thank you.
I guess it would be helpful for me, and I may turn to Senator Denver or to Patrick, what would the process be should one of the recommendations be that this task force continue in this iteration or an expanded iteration? Technically, how does that work?
I can take that, Madam Chair. Okay. There's two options. Obviously, the Senate Bill 782 as the example of legislation creating a task force. And there's multiple task forces that were created last session, but it's not necessary for legislation to be done to create a task force. I staff another task force, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission Task Force. It was just formed at the direction of the Speaker and the Senate President. They appointed members. They can be members, legislators and non-legislators in that case as well. So what if this group were to recommend to the legislature, the body of the legislature as a whole, and the report is addressed to the Speaker and Senate President, they'd be the appointing authorities. Then it could be either or. I mean, it could just be the recommendation we, the task force, believe that that there should be a continuing process, and that a task force, the same task force or another task force, should be appointed to continue looking at this, and then leave it up to them to decide which way to do that.
And in the process of doing that, can we specify that this particular discussion around CTE, extending the model to manufacturing and healthcare, that this be the crux of what this task force would turn into?
Expand the charge.
I'd like to add that we just have, I think one of the largest issues, and we've heard it over and over, is there's lots of attempts to to bring people in. And I think that we can, part of going forward is how are we going to bring in the pool of apprentices that are going to sustain the future public work, whether it's public or private, union, open shop. How are we going to get to that point? Because we can always make decisions with mandates and numbers, but we've all heard, and including the city of Portland said, yeah, we're making it happen, but you know, the pool isn't big enough to sustain the whole state with coming up with numbers. So I think part of the future challenge for this task force is what we can do to assist, which includes career tech and some of these other formats coming forward.
So. I just wanted to say, you know, how important I think it is that the state legislature has gotten involved in the issue, because you know, I think many times we see industry, you know, there's problems that arise in industry and things that we deal with on a daily basis, but you know, we're kind of all in our private world, and you know, I think it takes government sometimes to bring us together. This task force an example of that. You know, I think of changes in the construction industry, specifically like safe insurance. You know, that whole came together because of leadership at the state level. And I think with career technical education is another good example, an apprenticeship, that this is a problem that's kind of languished for years, and we've all been very aware of it. And it takes government's action to create something. And sometimes, you know, that's just the nucleus that we build on. I sat on a general advisory committee for Clark County Skill Center, and I saw that the Evergreen School District in Washington there, Southwest Washington, created the Skill Center, and it was the creation of the Skill Center that brought private industry now to the Skill Center. They're involved in, many of them sat on the same advisory team that I do, but there's been programs that have of instruction that have flourished. Some of them have gone away. Some of them there wasn't need or enough need in the industry, and those kind of washed out. But they're doing health care programs for high school kids, you know, entry into those industries. They just started an aviation program, dental construction. So I think sometimes it's the action, you know, of government to bring together, start that project off, and then let the industry kind of direct it from there. And I think that's what CTE can look like.
Well, it's heartening to know that we're having so much fun that you all want to stick around.
Or others.
But I think another technical question.
Yeah,
you know, we do have CCWD, and is there a way, if this task force continued with a bit different direction that was focused on that pipeline, how can we work with CCWD, which seems to be the entity in this building that could benefit from some potential work that we could do? I don't know that. Where do we go from here if we choose to take a different direction? And I'm not even sure that's a valid question, but I'm going to throw it out.
Well, from a technical perspective, were you to want an agency to be involved in a support in an official capacity, staffing, especially, I think that would probably require legislation. Okay. That I don't know. Leadership has the ability to appoint a task force and assign its existing staff to staff it. But its abilities to say, and you agency, go forth and staff it and spend money on staff time, that might require legislation.
Well, I guess I was thinking as a recommendation, another direction. You know, I kind of reflected back as I read through this, and I thought, all the people that came forward were not in support of apprenticeship. Everybody that came to speak to this group, in large part, had some issue with it, one way or another. And I'm not sure moving this group forward to continue meeting, we're gonna solve that. You know, I feel like there's a whole nother demographic out there that frankly is doing what they like to do. Many of them were, you know, brought up the idea of public contracting and just said, well, then we'll just stay out of it if that's going to be the rules. You know, I guess I would recommend the responsible bidder language because it takes into account a system that's already in place, a system that already has oversight. We were at a state council meeting just last week, and there was extensive conversation regarding women and minorities and recruiting and good effort and actually achieving something. And so there's already a body in place that has the ability to manage it. And there's a large portion of the industry that's very involved in it. And if that's what it's going to take to get more people involved, if we put them on notice and say, you know, in order to be involved, you're going to have to step up to that plate. I think we have a venue for that already, and it seems like it would be a solution outside of a much bigger issue that we're talking about, workforce development in total. You know, just from the apprenticeship perspective, I feel like it kind of hits the mark.
Madam Chair, yeah, thank you. I guess as we think about where we are, where we've been, where we are, where we could potentially go, I think the idea of reissuing the authority of this task force, and by that I say the folks that are here, because there's a lot of acquired knowledge here. The idea of replicating that or starting from scratch, I don't think would be well served in any capacity. But so I would support that. I think there's the more we meet, every hearing we had, I think we found that there was more that we didn't know, or there were parts of apprenticeship industry within Oregon that every time we talked to a new group or whatever, they had new problems or new concerns or new opportunities perhaps too. So there's a lot that we haven't yet uncovered, I think, as we, if we were really going to try to do a comprehensive examination. But beyond that, I think that as I look at the five approaches that were considered that Patrick's laid out here, you know, whether we're talking about the current system, ODOT's, Washington's, responsible bidder, none of them serves to increase the capacity of the pipeline. They just simply deal with the status quo as it currently exists, which I think everybody agrees is inadequate. So I would say that if we reconstitute this task force going forward, that the first charge should be to supply some recommendations of what we can do to increase the size of that pipeline, because until we do that, it doesn't matter what percentages you're talking about, what kind of scope and scale of projects you're dealing with or making recommendations on, it's not going to be adequate to meet what we already know is an inadequate supply to meet industry demands. And it only gets worse as time goes on, as we have a rapidly aging workforce. So it seems to me that if we're really going to try to do this, that this is the time we get serious about it. And I know that the CMGC process took some time. It took more than just, I think, one little foray. It was a commitment to stay at it until we got it right, and got it right so that it worked for industry. The other thing I would add that I think that, and this could be totally perhaps outside of the box, but the CMGC process was industry-led. It wasn't a legislative-led process. So going forward, I would certainly support letting the industry be the determiners of where this process goes instead of some of us. You know, the legislature becomes a support rather than the key drivers of the process. But just my thoughts. But again, if we really want to be serious about changing this so that we can impact our state, I think we need to determine if we're really serious about doing that. So.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah, Teddy. So, you know, I mean, we've been kind of skirting around the whole issue of what happens in the 2015 session, right? And, you know, I think I know that there will be several bills introduced around this issue that I'd like to think have been informed by the discussions and, you know, the knowledge that we've gained from this task force. I think, you know, I believe that there's going to be a reintroduction of Senate Bill 782 in its original form. There is going to be a bill around the responsible bidder kind of model. And if we have time today, you know, I wouldn't mind sharing some of that with the people here and getting some immediate feedback. I think that would be useful. I think that there probably will be a bill having to do with extending this task force. And so, you know, a certain amount of things are just going to play out over the course of the legislative session. But, you know, I think that the recommendations that come out of this task force, you know, as embodied in this document, will be useful as we go through those deliberations that probably won't get resolved until May or June, you know, towards the end of the session. So just wanted to throw out that perspective.
What do y'all think?
I'd be interested in hearing more thoughts from the senator, and I would have to kind of weigh in and agree with Rod. I like that. That doesn't seem to be a real invasive step that would, I think, incent apprenticeship opportunities on both public and private projects, the responsible bidder approach. And I think everybody's focus on CTE is great. I mean, that's something we've been working on for a long, long time, and we're gaining ground, I think, every place, which is really heartening. But I think the more emphasis and momentum we can give to that, that's good. And I think if the task force wanted to continue to meet and try and expand that world, I think that's a good thing. Mr. Sims would probably know off the top of his head, out of all the registered apprentices in the state, how many are in the construction industry. And it's a pretty overwhelming percentage, and it's a pretty darn good model that I think other folks should look at closely.
And you're talking about the healthcare and manufacturing and
right.
using it as a model in
right.
very different industries.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
I think if you're going to redo the charge of the committee, okay, I think Senator Denbrough and I are on the OWIB together, and I think there's some synergies between bringing some people in from the OWIBs who are really developing sector strategies in different areas in the state, and every state has a different sector strategy. So the model, I think someone has to be in that conversation from that group at least. But I mean, I see the issue is that we have education from kindergarten on, okay, with an identification that there's other opportunities other than college.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to get the pipeline until we have that identification that I used to have. And then after we have the identification, we have to have the appreciation of different intelligences. And what we don't appreciate is mechanical intelligence. We ignore it. So some sort of identification and codification and respect of that needs to be changed in the culture of the school systems, or the pipeline's not going to go anywhere. And then, as contractors, we got to create opportunities. You know, so where are the opportunities? After we've identified these individuals that have that talent to be in this career, where are the opportunities? So I think a lot of 782, which is wonderful, and I'm glad of the discussion, but kind of brought the cart before the horse. I mean, I think there's so much work we need to do to start implementing changes before we can start getting into some of these specifics. I mean, I think it's important to talk about increasing over a period of time the percentage of total hours, strategies for creating diversity. I think those are things we can now. But getting into some of the stuff after the fact, you know, contractors forcing to do this or not doing this, I don't think we're ready for that. So I just think we got a lot of work to do before we go. So.
Yes.
I'd just like to add an example onto those comments. I got this information from the Oregon Department of Employment. And speaking specifically to my trade, electrical, if you take all the apprenticeship programs for inside electrical in the state of Oregon, the employment department statistics, when they talk about annual openings, people leaving that trade for one reason or another, versus what their expectation is of all those combined apprenticeship programs to turn out over those years, will miss the mark by 20% 4 years in a row in the next 4 years. For example, in one of the recent years that they have records on, 2012, the total programs only turned out for those completions one more electrician than there was openings. And then as the enrollments go forward, people in that pipeline, where there was in 2005 834, then it went down to 578 in 07. 09 was 162. You know, so we can make all the requirements we want to require these people to come onto a job site, but if they're not in our apprenticeship pipeline, we don't accomplish anything. We have to solve this problem because a requirement, particularly in an apprenticeship program where you can put an apprentice in the program, but if it's a 4 or 5 year program, that solution is 4 or 5 years away. So saying we have to have it right now, here's a requirement, you have to do it, we can't make any impact on the number of, we can put more people in, but we have ratios of journeymen that they can work with. So even if we double the number of apprentices that want to go to work, if there's not a journey person for them to work with, they can't go to work. So it is, I like your phrase, the cart before the horse. I think that's exactly what any type of mandated requirement would be at this point in time. That's why we need to continue working on the solutions.
But would you think that maybe if there was a demand for it, would it not sort of drive the supply then?
I think the demand is there. Again, in my trade, we have our journeyman electricians are getting letters from other companies on a regular basis. There's a horrible shortage.
Right.
You know, so the demand is there.
Right.
And so people are trying to hire as apprentices. You know, not everybody. There are some people in the industry who aren't that helpful. I mean, we've heard all that in our discussions here. But I think in general, most of the people who are part of this solution, they're doing everything they can do to get more people into the workforce in apprenticeships. But it's a slow growth process because you've got to turn out the apprentice to become a journey person before you can give them an apprentice.
I'd like to expound on the responsible bidder. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see.
Nelda and then Sandy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just to you know what Carl's point is, but you know I've sat on a JATC for our trade for 20 years now, and you forecast how many apprentices you're going to take in by how many people that you can, you know, how many you can get out, because we don't promise 100 apprentices, you know, try to get them in our program and then get 10 dispatched, right? So I think your numbers you're seeing is probably where the demand has been. And one thing, I think if there's a state solution and a state mandate of 10%, which I think is pretty easy to meet, because our apprenticeship, all apprenticeship ratios are going to be 17% to 20% right now in the standards. That, you know, so 10 is, I think, pretty easy. So more demand, we can ramp up. We'll take in more people. I mean, we have hundreds that apply to our program, and we take in 30. You know, so I mean, it's, we've taken in extras, but you know, you only think, well, I only have like a 5 mechanics I can place, when really we should be placing 40 or 50 around the state every year. You know, new ones, right? But there's not, you know, we're not getting the calls. So I think some of that, there's people out there looking for opportunities. They just got to have them. And the JATCs will expand. You know, we can ramp up our programs.
There's that flexibility.
Yeah, we're running at a third of capacity to what we used to run at, just in this economic turndown. So there's no problem ramping up. I don't see for my industry.
And I think I go back to the responsible bidder, and exactly what you're saying is, in a poor economy, there's somebody that's always making a lot of money. The other 80% of us aren't making any money, but 20% have their niche. And whether it's specific to the trade and the industry that's working for their program, that's great. But what I do see is there's a shrinking pool that we do have. And I think with a responsible bidder, for public contracting, what you're going to, perhaps what could happen is that there's only so many apprentices. And we get into the open shop union side of that, and what will happen is that you're going to have less open shop contractors that are going to actually bid the work, because they're going to be mandated. They have to be a concurrent certified apprentice trainer. Not for one job. They have to continually have apprentices and be training them all year long. And based on that, I think that you're going to lose your open shop contractors. There's going to be a few of us that will be there and will continue to bid, but it's not going to give you the competition to get the best price, the best quality of your projects, the most amount of people to compete. I think it will shrink.
Senator?
Actually, Ron had his hand up, and Kathleen, too.
Rod, okay. Then the Senator.
Just on the interesting thing about, you know, capacity and developing that workforce and everything, one of the biggest needs right now for the contractors that we represent, the carpenters, and we're probably one of the most diverse trades out there, is not apprentices, interestingly enough, it's leadership. But it's an example of industry, you know, either can't or won't do it until they have to. Because we've all known about the demographics, you know, the math of the population of this country hasn't been a secret. We've been talking about it for 10 years. It's on us now, and we're dealing with it more. But, you know, I constantly have contractors contacting me looking for superintendents. And the thing about it is, a superintendent is an individual that takes responsibility for the entire project. I mean, he is the most knowledgeable guy on the job site. He's usually one of the older guys, too. And so we've seen these guys retire now. And in talking to contractors about this problem, you know, the disconnect is that the process for replacing those superintendents actually started 4 or 5 years ago. And if you didn't, you know, then you don't have them today. I don't have the supply of superintendents. Those are coming up through the ranks now, and we won't have them until we invest. I mean, the point there is that, you know, it costs money to develop, you know, those leaders, and industry many times won't spend that money unless they have to. I mean, now they're spending it, but it's because they have to. I think apprenticeship's the same thing. You don't see the investment in that along the way until you need it. And then when you need it, you want to run and pull it off the shelf. Well, it's an investment. But without the requirement, folks won't make that investment unless they have to.
Kathleen?
Yeah, so I just I kind of wanted to weigh in on some things that Sandy was saying. But I think in terms of public contracting, it would be more challenging to have a responsible bidder requirement only, you know, because it does have the potential of reducing the pool of bidders and getting bids. I mean, even now, with all of the work that's happening in the Portland metro area, we're not seeing as many bids as we had before, which obviously increase the cost to the public. And I think, you know, one of the other potentials that we could see is the number of minority women and emerging small businesses that we've kind of worked hard to bring to the table kind of back off from bidding if they think they have to, you know, register, if they have to have everything taken care of prior to bidding, or they absolutely have to be a registered training agent in order to bid. You know, I think with smaller contractors, you know, talking to them more about what the process is and having the opportunity to do that sort of upfront helps. And so, you know, not so much having that responsible bidder piece, I think, you know, would increase, you know, the number of bidders that we're going to have and would increase competition. I will also say that we recently, our city attorney's office actually received a letter from an attorney who basically said that our workforce training and hiring program was, you know, violated antitrust sentiments, blah, 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 and, you know, that we better sort of cease the program, or, you know, this attorney potentially would be gathering up a group of contractors to sue the city. My understanding is, kind of after talking with the city attorney's office, that they did not realize as part of our current program, you are not required to be a trainee agent in order to bid, and that seemed to be the sticking point for them. So that's just, you know, something to kind of be aware of is, I don't know if it's already out there in the general sort of, you know, knowledge that, you know, that might be something we're looking into, but we're already getting letters about it, so interestingly enough.
Well, you try to keep a secret.
Senator.
Yeah, Rod was going to say
Rod.
Well, it's perplexing to me. I mean, I hear Sandy say, if we make these rules, we'll eliminate people that aren't training agents from bidding, and Kathleen saying that because of those rules requiring you to train, you know, we can't require that for you to bid the work. Well, then I guess my question would be, if you don't require them to be a training agent or you don't require them to be involved in apprenticeship to bid the work, then how is that going to promote apprenticeship? You know, I think the proactive approach, and I mean, I have a contractors meeting tonight that I'm going to, and on my agenda of things to talk about is, if you don't have 10% of your workforce apprentices, then 2 years from now, when there's a public contracting law, you won't be able to bid on it. So if you want to be there tomorrow, you got to start today. And it's just a matter of communication and understanding what the rules are. You know, I think you might be right. You may see a dip in competitive bid the first 6 months this rule would go into effect. And then I think everybody would look around the table and go, wow, we either need to be part of the game or we're going to be out of the game. You know, it's simple business. And Ron kind of said it himself, is people won't do it until they have to. So, you know, I don't know how you're ever going to resolve the issue of, well, I don't want to be a training agent, but I want to bid that job that requires apprentices. That can't happen. You know, you either get one or the other. And I thought our job here was to promote apprenticeship. And so we need to pick the one, not the other. And whatever that one is, I think we can figure that out. But to just say there can't be a requirement, I think we're done here then, if that's the case. It doesn't work.
Kathleen, did you have another comment?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it is a business decision for some smaller businesses, especially certified firms, to commit to the cost of providing the training for an apprentice. And if you're saying to them, before you can bid with us, you have to become a registered training agent, you may not get the job. That's going to be an issue for some of them because they can't, you know, they can't potentially afford that extra cost. So I think in that sense, it has the potential of decreasing the pool of available bidders because you have some smaller firms that just, you know, financially, not saying that they don't want to participate in apprenticeship. I think a lot of them do, and some of them do. But I think it is a very big business decision for a lot of them, and they're not familiar with the apprenticeship system. And so, you know, requiring that in order to bid will be a bigger challenge for them. Not for larger firms, but for smaller firms.
Yes, Barry.
Well, one of the things I was rereading this, and it looks like there's going to be certain public works projects that you have to be the responsible bidder proposal. So I think for the smaller ones, you still have the smaller contracts, the smaller jobs. So I think that would still leave those open for them. And it's kind of how it's implemented as far as if you're going to require it for the prime, which generally a lot of our projects, we get a prime, then they hire the subs. And how they set that up is really going to be the between them and the subs. And I think they can offset some of that if they have the program in place, is the way I kind of see it. So I think if it's certain projects, and I would assume that would be a dollar amount, $1 million, $5 million, and, you know, you usually get the bigger firms anyway, bidding those for us. I'm not sure about the city, but for the state. So I think they have something in place, and I don't see that for us as necessarily causing any difficulty for the future.
Ron?
Registered training agent doesn't cost anything. As far as I know, most of the union programs, mine, there's no fee associated with it. I think the majority of the private ones, those are paid, the individuals pay the tuition for the program, so I don't know that there really is a cost. I guess there's, you know, some administrative time that you put into it, but it really isn't a cost.
Well, it depends on the program. I mean, yes, if you're a signatory to a union, you don't have a cost, but it's not the same for every apprenticeship program out there. Some programs have application fees, that, you know, in terms of registering as a trainee agent. I mean, those aren't exorbitant, but I mean, the cost really, it can involve administrative costs, certainly, you know, but with some of the open shop contractors, they have to pay a cents per hour fee for all of their employees, not just those that, for the public project that they're working on. So there are some other costs that can, you know, that...
See, and we do it all for them.
Right.
Yeah, so but it's open shop pays for them. Mm-hmm. A union would come out of their package.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we foot the bill for every hour for all my employees.
Nelda?
That would be tough. I don't know.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, public works projects have money built into them for apprenticeship, or at least that's how we, you know, we take money from our wages to fund apprenticeship. So we're privately funded, and so there is money there, and it's paid on all workers for us too, journeymen and apprentices. That's what funds the trust funds that are, you know, we're totally nonprofit all the way across to fund the training. So I don't see the money thing being as much of an issue, I guess, because there's no cost to being a training agent. It's part of the public works contracts. The funding's already there.
I think where a potential issue could be is like for an electrical contractor, we can't have apprentices unless we're a registered apprenticeship training agent anyway. So it's a non-issue for what I do. Where I would be concerned about some of the other folks is if they would need to establish a program for what they do, because somebody might, well, if you look at somebody who's not signatory, there may be a union apprenticeship program, but what if they don't want to be a union contractor? And what if there's not, you know...
There's only one trade like that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm having a little issue because it's the... What's the market share from the non-union to the open shop? I think the perception is that we're controlling the market, and we're not.
What do you mean we?
Union. I'm saying the last study I did, at maximum in the, you know... If we're 30% of the whole market, you can specifically say Intel, we might have a certain segment, but the plumbing and the residential, we have zero residential market, zero. And light commercial, we're probably 20% of the market. So here we are talking our 20% and what we're doing for this, and then there's 80% who said, I don't want to register, I don't want to do that. Someone's making money. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if we only have 20% of the market, I'm having a little hard time when we're the task force of apprenticeship in the state, and we're talking about that someone doesn't want to be a registered agent.
Right.
That makes no sense to me.
Well, and again, we have to go back to the different crafts and the different segments. I'm in heavy highway, and so I'm a registered agent. When you come to road work, you know, I would say 80% or more are open shop that do road work. There aren't a lot of unions that are out there competing with me, to be perfectly honest. And all of the people that, you know, I compete with are registered training agents if they want to work in the city of Portland. Otherwise, they really don't have to. Although there is not a benefit for any one of us not to have apprentices and be training them, because we have lack of apprentices just like everybody else. And we need to keep feeding the younger people and bring them up. And that's one of my difficulties. The other thing is, because I am an agent, I do pay for their education when they go to school in the wintertime. I do pay them a salary because, like any good contractor, if you want to keep an apprentice and keep him working through the process, you are going to invest that money. There's no question. But these smaller companies, when these apprentices have to go off to school and they don't have a lot of work, they're not going to pay them to go because they don't have to. But what's going to happen is there's a lack of apprentices. They're not going to have them so that they can bid a $500,000 job or a $250,000 job. And I just see that some of those people are just going to pull out of it. And I understand union has an apprentice program, but you're isolating only the larger open shops that are going to be able to compete on public work. And if that's where we go with this responsible bidder, I think that's what's going to happen.
Senator?
Just to kind of draw this all together and building off of some of the things that, you know, that I've heard, you know, I think that our goal here is to, I think everyone agrees that we want to build apprenticeship, right? We all believe in it. We want to build it. It's important. I'm going to speak for the state now. Believe me, I can't speak for the state, but I'm going to say that, you know, it's my sense that the state has an interest in promoting apprenticeship as part of its overall higher education agenda. You know, we want, you know, as, you know, if we were talking about 40-40-20, as Mark was saying, that middle 40, the state has decided is a real priority for this state. And I think we all agree that apprenticeship is a big part of that. And so it's not surprising that the state would want to use its purchasing power, and, you know, in fact, the purchasing power of the entire public sector to promote apprenticeship. Now, on the other hand, we don't want to do damage, right? We don't want to create, you know, really bad, harmful disruptions on industry. And so what we have to figure out is what can we do that will, you know, in fact, send a clear message, you know, that the state wants to see apprentices used, and, you know, at the same time to set that threshold so that it's a reasonable one. I think, you know, the conversation from the very beginning when 782 was being discussed was that a 10% standard should be something that we can do, you know, certainly on, you know, projects of a certain size, and, you know, that would work for everyone. But we did also hear some problems with that, especially a model, you know, going forward. How do you, you know, what do you do in terms of the, you know, the ratio? If, you know, if an apprentice gets sick, does that mean that a, you know, a job is out of compliance, or, you know, that there are some issues around flexibility that we would need to be addressed. And, you know, I still do believe that that this state can adopt a policy, you know, ideally through legislation, that would, you know, that would do that. That would send that strong signal, that would come up with a program that would, you know, if it wasn't perfect for everyone, it would be, you know, it would certainly be workable for everyone. And that is something that could be built on. And I say built on, you know, as we're expanding that pipeline through CTE, through pre-apprenticeship, you know, through changes to our educational system, that if we, over time, increase that percentage that we're expecting, we'll also have the workers available, you know, with the skills to do that. So, you know, for me personally, that has been my interest in the responsible bidder model. But again, and, you know, Sandy, I agree with you totally, that the devil is in the details of what does that mean? What does the responsible bidder program mean within this context? So, you know, if you could, Madam Chair, I would like to just share with the group sort of, you know, the 1,000-foot level of what we're, you know, what I, you know, some of us have been talking about as
Please.
A way of taking responsible bidder, and this is an expansion of, you know, it's changed from what the NECA initial proposal was to try to create some more flexibility.
Can I ask a question? And again, this is simple ignorance, putting it out there, but still not fully educated on. So, thank you. Now, I'll just use an example. open shop contractor that does, and I'll cross here more to Francine. So an open shop drywaller that does some metal stud and drywall and ceilings. For his, what would a training agent mean for him? I mean, because it's, if I'm right, it's not just an individual in the office that takes some test and becomes a training agent. Is that, to be the training agent, does he actually have to then also administer the whole apprenticeship within that given company?
Well, I would think that they would partner with other ones of their like industry and form an apprenticeship thing where they're sharing.
But
the administration.
I guess then versus, and I don't even know if they have it. I'm assuming Northwest College of Construction has a program that they can send people out there that get trained.
Correct.
Why would he have to be a training agent?
Well, because a training agent is the individual, that company that's responsible. Because then when we dispatch, okay, they're indentured to that company, and they have responsibilities that they need to follow. You know, so we got to make sure they're going. I mean, there's all sorts of policies and rules, so there's consistencies. I mean, there's a moral application, which we're not talking about here. Morally, what we want to do is we want to take an individual who wants a career in a particular trade, and we want to give them enough tools for them to be successful for the rest of their lives.
Sure.
Okay? We don't want to take them for a couple of years and then say goodbye. We have a commitment. So, and part of that commitment is an education program, a structure, defending them from a contractor as a JATC might, if they're not being rotated in skill sets and things like that. So I think you have to have a specific program in drywalling, which is an adapt to say in 3 or 4 years, these are the skill sets this person's going to use so they can go out and...
Okay. So now I'll turn it back onto myself. I send my guys to the union carpenters to be trained. Excuse me if I'm wrong. I don't think I have a training agent inside my office.
You are the training agent. Your company's the training agent.
As a company, you have a responsibility to make sure when the apprentice is...
I know, but when a contractor who's sending their people to Northwest College of Construction,
there's two
have
pieces.
That same responsibility.
There's two pieces. There's the apprenticeship training, which is the at the school studying, taking tests, mm-hmm. recording their hours, documenting their training. That's the JETC. That's the Northwest College of Construction. And then there's Girding Construction, which when they're out on your job, you're paying them by the hour.
Yep.
You have a responsibility to make sure they're safe.
Sure.
They're being supervised, and they're doing work which is in their trade, their scope of work. And so you are the training agent, and you have qualified employees that manage them on the job. So there's the on-the-job training agent, there's the in-class apprenticeship committee.
And I guess my point being, maybe I'm straining for Nats, I have that implied responsibility, and absolutely, I would think, but I don't think any, again, I don't have
any. Well, there's a compliance issue. For instance, I had a contractor who was doing work in white salmon, okay, and he let the apprentice go out there by themselves, okay, without any journeyman supervision. And that's as Steve can probably comment, but that's...
Get ready.
Steve's with us.
I mean, that's against BOLI law.
Sure.
So
right.
That's part. So the training agent is the one that gets punished for that. They can lose their training agent status.
Absolutely.
Or be suspended. And that's the purpose of the training agent, is to follow the rules and procedures of BOLI.
And how that's monitored...
Can we hold off for just 1 second? Okay. I think Senator Dembrough had some comment he wanted to make.
Well, I just wanted to say...
I'm just trying to get educated.
Yeah. This is just a technical aside. I just wanted to, before you get too engrossed in this, if you're leaping through it, I only wanted you to have the top sheet, not the LC. You're happy. Yeah.
Oh, God bless you. That's your staff.
Another secret revealed.
it's fine that you have it, but recognize that this was outdated as soon as it was printed. It's already, you know, it's already being changed. It's by no means ready to see the light of day. I want to give that caveat.
We do have a little bit more time, but I do want to ask a question about this so I understand it now that this framework has been put before us. and I'm not quite sure who direct it to. It, Nelda, it may be you.
If you'd like, I could just...
Could you go through
it? Let me just say a few things. So if we're ready to do that, yeah. So the kind of rationale behind this is twofold, or threefold, let's say. That is, it's an attempt to work off of the existing system that we have, where we have JATCs in place, you know, for the different crafts. It's to deal with the concern that we heard way in the early days of this committee that you wanted to have apprentices who got experience both on the public side and the private side, that there are some that there are differences, and your goal is to train them in as broad an arena as possible, so that, you know, when we're thinking about apprentice use, you know, certainly the state can't tell people where they have to use apprentices, but we want to have as broad a mix of experience for apprentices as possible. So this would be encouraging contractors to be using apprentices both on the private side and on the public side. And it would be looking at performance, okay? So looking back in, you know, over the previous calendar year. And I will say, by the way, going back to, I don't know, was it Rod or Frank, but somebody who you know, talked about the concern that people should plan for this. You know, we would have this not taking effect immediately. I mean, people would have plenty of warning time so that, you know, they could, you know, take the time to get into the system, as it were. The decision that was made was, you know, to use that 10% standard and to have it apply only to projects that were $1 million or more. And that, again, to provide some more flexibility, and especially for those, you know, the small emerging minority contractors, that even if they themselves didn't have a history of employing at the standard, if they were part of a JATC that did, then they would, you know, they would qualify. So that we're not, I mean, we are looking at this contractor by contractor, but we're really focusing on, you know, the industry in a larger sense. So, and I don't know, you know, John, I remember you suggesting this use of the JATC, and I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit, just to clarify.
Thank you. That was my question. If somebody could explain bullet or check mark number three, it would be helpful.
Well, I know it was a couple meetings ago that I spoke about possibly looking at the JATC at large, which I think speaks to the industry comment, rather than on a job-by-job basis. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, I think it incents training on public and private works both, which I think is a good thing. It helps address, I think, some of the, well, I'll go to the second concern first, I guess, is it I think it addresses some of the problems that you see where a contractor maybe normally doesn't employ apprentices, they're forced to for a government job, and then once they're done with that job, they lay the apprentice off and don't show the interest in training for the long term, which I think is harmful to the individual and harmful to the... the industry. And then I think it also helps alleviate some of the issues that I think we've had in the Portland area, which is obviously a different marketplace than around the rest of the state, over the past couple years, where you had a lot of public works projects going on that I think were struggling to meet Portland workforce training and hiring numbers, but yet you had numbers of people of color and women that were working out at Intel that weren't really interested in leaving a 5-10 or 6-10 job, meaning 5 days a week, 10 hours a day, or 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, where they're obviously making a ton of money, to be pulled off that job and be sent to a job that's under the City of Portland's Workforce Training and Hiring Program and take a substantial pay cut, because those are normally 5-8 jobs, 40-hour a week jobs. So I think mm-hmm. that if you could look at the JATC's numbers and the JATC's retention rate and graduation rate, I think that's a healthier way of looking at apprenticeship than on a job-by-job-by-job basis. And then I think that also provides some flexibility for the small contractors that either by virtue of the size of the project or just the size of their crew. I mean, if you take a small, I come out of the masonry industry, but if you take it, and I don't want to speak for somebody that does concrete, but you know, there I think you're talking about probably a carpenter or two and a laborer or two and a cement mason and a laborer. So you might have 5 or 6 people on that job, but you're not going to have enough people to have apprentices for each one of those crafts necessarily. So I think if you look back to the JATCs again, then that would provide coverage for those small contractors.
And let me just clarify one other thing, and that's that this concept excludes ODOT from what we're talking about here.
That was the problem. My big problem is ODOT, and that's why I was talking about the diversity, I think, early on, that you can't get, you know, ODOT wants diversity on every job site, and that's just not workable for our employers. Like John said, they've got contracts every place. You know, no apprentice is going to quit one job or shouldn't have to go take a job that works lesser hours or further away from home, things like that. So that's the biggest piece, is measuring the diversity by the JATC. And I think the hours, that works too, because, you know, at least for my trade, 11% of our contractors have 10 or more employees, just to put that in perspective. So we're not all these huge contractors. I think that's what John's getting to. We have a lot of small contractors, we have a lot of mom and pops, you know, that's not, I mean, we live in the real world here too, so that's why the JATC management numbers tracking, state of Oregon tracks all these numbers. We go through our standard, each apprentice comes out with the same sort of training, the same background to what we think in the industry a journeyman should have. That's how all this has evolved, so that's how we make real journeymen instead of just trainees or sub-journeymen.
Well, the state already currently mandates that there's minority goals established by each of the JATCs, so you kind of address the minority issue, too, through that.
Any apprenticeship program, when they get their fifth apprentice, has to turn in EEOC goals, and the target is 9% women and 16% minority right now.
We're going to run out of time.
I know.
We have about 22 minutes. We do need to make a decision about moving forward, at a minimum, the report on to our presiding officers. I would like to ask Senator Denver, you said there was one other bill that was being proposed. Did you want to touch on that, or is that something?
No.
The reintroduction of 782?
Right. Okay. My understanding is that 782 is probably going to be thrown back into the mix in the next session.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As will a bill to reconstitute and continue the work of the task force.
Okay. That's a bill.
Right.
Okay.
So I guess that's a good place to start if you want to talk about recommendations, Madam Chair, is whether the group as a whole wants to recommend that as one of its recommendations or as its recommendation.
The reconstitution of the task force. I guess I'll look for.
Since I was the first one that was brought up.
For a consensus that I'm hearing from many of you that you're not willing to leave this work undone. I think we would need a vote to see if that recommendation would be included in here.
If there's no objection, you could do it by no objection, Madam Chair.
Is there any objection?
Just one clarifying question, if I may. Would the intent be to have the group be the same, or would it be to try and add a couple of other folks from the manufacturing and maybe healthcare if they could be ID'd?
Are there any objections to that? To expand the scope of the task force. Any objections?
Do you want to make it?
And I don't know if we need to clarify that it is just manufacturing and healthcare, but expand
other
related industries where apprenticeship may be
determined by the committee.
The motion was implied.
Sure. Okay. In agreement.
So the motion then is to recommend reconstituting the task force with additional members representing the manufacturing and healthcare industries.
Or other like or other, entities. Or, yeah.
Manufacturing, comma, healthcare, comma, or other like.
Recommended by the task force.
As I by the.
Okay.
I'll leave that to the.
Yeah, I think that's it. That's what represented.
The legislators.
Yeah.
Let them recommend.
Yeah, I mean, my preference would be to leave it kind of broad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if the goal is to enhance apprenticeship around the state, you know, the getting the right people in the right industries, that's something, you know, I would want to give some discretion over.
So you could just say industry sectors.
Yes,
or other additional
and leave
industry
out manufacturing
sectors.
And healthcare.
Yeah.
I think.
How's this for a suggestion?
Make it very broad.
So the original 782 that passed and was enacted allowed the presiding officers of the Senate and House to appoint additional members, and how that was we came close to doing that one time. So this the group, the task force then might recommend to leadership
on so
they it could reconstitute as is, and then the task force itself could make recommendations on.
The second thing that we heard a lot of conversation about at the beginning of the meeting was the support for career tech education revitalization. Is that something we want to include as a recommendation in here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Everybody in any objection? Okay.
Can I throw in one other, I think, related topic? And I
is this a third or
yeah,
related
I,
to
I,
career
I,
tech
I,
ed?
Well, it's tied. Well, it's. They're sort of tied together. I think what I'm going to suggest is tied to success for apprentices. And I, again, if I'm out of order, just throw the gavel down and tell me
I'm looking to the
I'm
group.
Going down
it will
a,
require
a rabbit
a vote.
Hole. But if we're going to recommend continuing focus on CTE, I would be in favor of recommending to the 2015 legislature to fund a robust infrastructure package, because we can talk about funding, starting all the apprentices we want, but if they don't have jobs to go to, they're not going to journey out.
Send that message to DC too.
So something about the gas tax, is that what you're
we need transportation package.
I'll be there in the room to testify.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I would toss out. I think all of us would love to see anything for more construction, but is. Does that get us too far off a point here?
That's a little off point. I'll respect this.
Try that.
John's always looking for other mountaintops to sing that one from.
Madam Chair,
yes, sir.
You know, one subject that I would like to see called out. I mean, we've touched on it. It was part of the original charge, but I think there is more work to be done. Is the whole issue of you know, incentivizing non-traditional members of the workforce, right? Women, workers of color, you know, et cetera. And I think, you know, certainly as we build up CTE, as Rod said, that will help. As we're having more apprentices in general, that will help. But I think there is probably still work to be done with that. And I would personally appreciate having that be on the agenda as we keep talking.
Question to that, I guess my assumption would be is if we don't sunset this, all the original items, because there's and that's certainly one of them, the diversity
would continue
component,
as topics.
They would all continue to be.
Just a clarification, this is going to sunset.
It will.
It'll sunset before the legislature can take action to do otherwise.
Okay.
So it sunsets the day that in January when legislature first comes in. So what we'd be asking is that at some point they reconstitute it probably after that.
So
now they can just do it exactly like it is
so
in Senate Bill 782, of course. And maybe that's what you recommend is something along those lines.
Would it be fair for us to continue the work plus these added items? Would that be fair language?
It sounds as though that the representative is introducing a bill that would take the existing task force and continue it, and we could do it under the umbrella of what we're recommending here today.
A lot of those things could be determined as it goes forward.
Okay.
What else do you want to add onto our plate?
Mm-hmm. And as that bill moves.
Yeah.
Right.
or not.
Or not, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, my hope would be that by the end of the session, we'll be able to remove those issues related to the standards for public contracting, because we'll have dealt with that, you know, legislatively. So those issues won't be on the table anymore, at least in the short term, other than just monitoring how it seems to be working.
So what we have on the table right now is the recommendation as Patrick presented it, or the report as Patrick presented it, with two recommendations. Are there any objections to those two, or anything else people want to talk about?
Can I hear what the motion is again?
I could summarize.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the motion would be to adopt the report as drafted with the addition of two recommendations. Those recommendations, as I have, would be to reconstitute the task force with allowance of the ability to add additional members of the task force in the areas including but not limited to manufacturing and healthcare and other similar fields. That's one recommendation. Second recommendation would be to recommend the legislature increase resources dedicated to career and technical education.
I want to go back to the first one. I think we had a comment that maybe using other industry sectors as opposed to manufacturing, mm-hmm, and healthcare.
Oh, okay.
Make
so,
it broad.
Yeah, so,
is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Instead of calling out those two and others,
yep,
just say other
industry sectors.
That's even better. Mm-hmm.
So that leaves it broad.
Yeah. On the second note, could you reread that again, what you were proposing on this on
CTE?
The crew check?
Just what I was winging here is recommend the legislature consider increasing investments in career and technical education.
Would it be fair to add substantial and permanent investment in career tech?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sure. Go for it.
Substantial and sustainable.
Yeah.
Or substantial and sustainable.
Yeah, and I would also add in creating real pathways to apprenticeship.
That's the communication part.
Okay.
Yeah.
And exploring other workforce development opportunities.
Where would you want to put that? Where would you want to put that wheel?
Right after the investments in CTE.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll have Patrick read it one more time. We've got 12 minutes. Just to make sure we're all comfortable.
All right, so I was going to pretty this up a little bit, but it'll say something along these lines. That this task force recommends that the legislature can reconstitute. Is that the word we want to use? Reconstitute or reappoint?
Recommission.
I like that. Recommission the apprenticeship and state contracting. We're going to stick with that term, state contracting task force, as well as provide the opportunity to appoint additional members in other related fields.
In other industry sectors.
Industry sectors. I'm going to write that down twice.
Is that good? Industry sectors.
And then the second one would be a recommendation to increase, how do you want to word it, resources, funding?
Substantial and sustainable.
Uh-huh. Substantial.
Resources. Yeah. For career technical education,
CTE, and apprenticeship.
Or CTE,
pathway to apprenticeship.
Yeah, spelled out.
Pathway
and
to apprenticeship.
Real pathways to apprenticeship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As is. And then those two would fall underneath there. And just for the records, we'll take a motion, and we'll vote on that motion, and then what I'll do is I will go back and draft this. And so the motion will encompass the knowledge that I will draft it and that you can provide feedback if I did not capture this correctly. We can fine-tune it offline, but the motion
sounds good.
Capture that.
Second.
Okay. I think we need a motion first.
Just a motion, and no second is necessary.
I so moved.
Okay. Second.
We have one, whether we want it or not.
There you go.
Good.
And so then we can do it. You can ask if there's any discussion on the motion.
Is there further discussion? Any objections? Nice work, everyone. Anything for the good of the order? We have 10 minutes.
Meeting.
I believe. See you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, on that note, then, I believe we are adjourned.
Oh.
Then I believe we are adjourned.
Oh.